From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, alien abductions. Here's what's happening. Strong earthquake striking Southern California tonight, initially pegged at a magnitude 5.5. The epicenter believed to be around Ridgecrest, which is about 52 miles from Barstow. There were no immediately reports of injuries or major structural damage. A 5.5 is not the biggest out there for Southern California, but you sure can feel it. Police were out in force Wednesday night in cities across the country to enforce curfews that were seen as helping reduce late-night rioting, and officials were hoping for a calmer night amid the ongoing George Floyd protests. In New York City, many protesters opted to stay out past the 8 p.m. curfew, and various videos posted online showed dozens of demonstrators being arrested for breaking curfew there. Minnesota's Attorney General's office said that Derek Chauvin, the Minneapolis officer who knelt on George Floyd's neck and killed him, now faces an upgraded charge of second-degree murder, and arrest warrants have been issued for the other three officers who were at the scene. Chauvin previously had been charged with third-degree murder and second-degree manslaughter charges that remained in effect. The other three officers involved, Thomas Lane, J.A. Kund, and Tao were being charged with two counts of aiding and abetting with second-degree murder. If convicted on both counts, the officers face a maximum sentence of 50 years in prison, a fine up to $20,000. The Missouri Attorney General Keith Ellison affirmed that with the upgraded charges, all four officers face the same potential maximum sentence. We shall see what happens in the court process. Federal law enforcement officials are probing whether criminal actors, and I believe they are there, are coordinating violent activities during protests that are looking into reports that rocks and bricks have been dropped off to throw at police and other law enforcement as cities across the country grapple with the uptick in violence. There have been reports that an organization, an extreme far-right organization called the Boogaloos, they dress up with Hawaiian shirts and khakis, have been shown to be at some of these scenes causing all kinds of problems, and they apparently are armed. U.S. Defense Secretary Mark Esper said that he does not support invoking the Insurrection Act to deploy active duty forces to quell civil unrest for now, despite President Donald Trump's threats to militarize America's response to these mass threats. Let's check in with Howard Bloom, our expert on the global brain. Too many global bees here, Howard. Welcome to the program, and what's your take on all of this?
Well, thanks to cell phone video, we all saw something on Monday, May 25th, that shocked and angered even buttoned-up people like me. In front of our very eyes, a white policeman in Minneapolis murdered a black man who had his hands zip-tied behind his back and was peaceful. And I don't know about you, but every time I watch the video of this killing, I shout, stop, at the television screen. The result of the video's airing may have been the biggest outbreak of protest in American history. Protests took place in 140 American cities and towns. They spread overseas to England, France, Germany, Italy, Denmark, Brazil, Mexico, Australia, New Zealand, Canada, and Poland, and so far they've lasted 9 days. But there were two events taking place simultaneously over these last 9 days. Peaceful protests and what you alluded to, methodical destruction. The destroyers used the peaceful protesters as a shield, a cover, for their own agenda. Now, for 40 years, far-right white supremacist groups have wanted a race war. These are the Boogaloo guys. A second civil war, at the end of which they are sure they will end up with an all-white North America. Far-left Antifa and anarchist groups, on the other hand, are also willing to use violence. But a study by the University of Maryland shows that 88% of domestic terrorist acts are done by far-right movements, not by the extremists from the left. What's more, a Business Insider headline reports that the FBI has no intelligence indicating Antifa was linked to the George Floyd violence, and CNN reports that white supremacists have posed as Antifa online and have called for violence. There's also suspicion the white supremacist groups have hacked into police radio and have given shoot-to-kill orders. But despite an unpassed bill from Army veteran and Staten Island Congressman Max Rose, no one is investigating the involvement of the white supremacists, and that is a danger. The right-wing militia groups are heavily armed, and they are potential sources of mass murder. remember what one of the sympathizers of the far-right militia movement, Timothy McVeigh, did in 1995.
That's right.
Destroyed the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Office Building in Oklahoma City and killed 168 people, something of a sort that no Antifa member has ever attempted. But what did the peaceful protest, accomplish? The protest hurried the arrest of the murderer, police officer Derek Chauvin, and of his three accomplices, the policemen who stood around him, protecting him while he slowly and deliberately killed George Floyd. The protest spotlighted the unacceptable police habit of killing men for the crime of walking or driving while black. What's more, according to the New York Times, the protest motivated politicians around the country to consider legislation aimed at overhauling police procedures, including a ban on chokeholds in Colorado and a bill aimed at minimizing the use of lethal force in Wisconsin. The protest motivated Barack Obama to call on the mayor of every town and city to push for police reform. The protest motivated former President Jimmy Carter to announce that as a white male of the South, I know all too well the impact of segregation and injustice to African Americans. We need a government as good as its people, and we are better than this. And the protest motivated former Secretary of Defense General James Mad Dog Mattis to warn that designating American streets as battle spaces is against the Constitution. There's something more. In many cases, a huge percentage of the protesters were white. And in Atlanta, Denver, New York, L.A., St. Paul, Minnesota, and Bristol, Connecticut, police chiefs, police officers, and sheriffs went down on one knee or hugged and joined the protesters, thus reviving the hope for something many have wished for, but that we have never achieved, a post-racial society. As former President George W. Bush concluded, this is not the time for us to lecture. It is time for us to listen. It is time for America to examine our tragic failures, and as we do, we will also see some of our redeeming strengths.
We shall see what happens over the next few days, Howard, with these charges against the other police officers. People might calm down a little bit. Mourning the loss of George Floyd, President Donald Trump said in an exclusive interview with Newsmax TV's Sean Spicer that something snapped in the fired Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin the day he killed the unarmed African American. President Trump lamented that the passive approach, he said, extreme local leaders embraced in efforts to maintain order as peaceful protests turned violent, destroying lives and cities. Chris Ruddy is the founder of Newsmax TV. I had a chance to talk with him tonight. Chris, how do you think the president handled himself on Spicer and Company?
You know, if he keeps talking that way and in that tone, I think he's got a good shot at reelection. You know, it's going to be a tough fight, George. But I think the president sounded pretty balanced and pretty resolute. You know, he wants to heal the nation, but he also wants law and order. I think that's what most Americans want.
He's in a really difficult situation. We get hit with the COVID-19. We get hit with these protests. And I'm convinced that there are some actors behind the protests causing all these problems. How did he react to it on Sean's show today?
You know, he was in a really good mood, and he was really calm. He's an unflappable guy, and he came on Newsmax. He's been on Newsmax before, but this was his big interview as president, almost a half hour. And I think he was pretty good throughout the whole thing. Nothing fazed him. Now, I have to tell you, I've known the man for 20 years. We're friends. And I think some of these things, the coronavirus, the riots, I think they threw him off balance. He's like a boxer that gets got two punches out of left field he wasn't expecting. But he's really gotten his footing again. And I think, you know, people are going to have to judge. It's a binary choice between him and Biden. He's making a very strong pitch. He's a sales guy. And people that tune into Newsmax TV, they can still watch it if they go to NewsmaxTV.com or they will be airing it through the weekend on Newsmax. And we're on all the cable channels in the United States right now.
Well, let's hope these protests die down. COVID-19 appears to be slowing down a little bit. What about his thoughts on social media these days, Chris?
Well, Sean asked him about that, and he says, look, he thinks that there should be federal investigations. I believe the social media companies to one degree or another, and I also think Google is a monopoly, and they have a political bias. And if they were completely fair and neutral, I think I'd be fine with it. But I'm a conservative. I'm a reasonable conservative. You know me for many years. I'm a Reagan guy. And I just want a fair balance. I don't want the media to favor me. I don't want it to oppose me. I think it should be a neutral platform. You go to Newsmax.com right now, you'll find articles critical of the president and supportive of the president, because that's what I believe a news organization is supposed to do. But you don't. There's clear evidence that companies like Twitter and Facebook are bad actors here.
Well, you got the president on the show. That was a coup all by itself. Did it take a lot of arm bending and twisting?
No, you know, Sean Spicer did that. And I haven't asked the president for an interview because I was waiting for Newsmax to get in all the cable homes. And we just recently signed with Mediacom. That put us in 70 million cable homes. We're on DirecTV, Dish, U-verse, Fios, Spectrum, Charter, all of those, Cox. And so it's great. And he wanted to come on. He's watching. The president tells me he's watching the shows all the time. He likes this guy, Chris Salcedo. We have Greg Kelly and, of course, Sean Spicer, who used to work for him.
That's right. Sean Spicer was the former White House press secretary. And you just heard from Chris Ruddy, the founder of Newsmax.com and Newsmax TV. Great Depression era levels of unemployment, an economy in downward spiral, more than 100,000 dead from a killer virus, cities in flames amid widespread civil unrest, and a stock market that marches even higher. Ms. Shedlock, our registered investment advisor, why is the stock market still strong, Mish?
Can't figure that out, George. You know, a lot of people are asking that question. I can point to one thing, though. I mean, everyone knew these economic reports would be bad. So the factory orders report, new orders came in today. They were down 13%. Now, if I would have given you that number in January and said this was going to happen in April or May, you know, you would have thought I was nuts and you would have been shocked by it. But the number came out today, and actually the Bloomberg consensus estimate was down 14%. So when it was only down 13%, it looked good. The ADP report, they've got an employment report. I don't follow it too much because it bounces all over the place. I don't have an edge in predicting that, but it was a little bit better than expected today. And we had the ISM non-manufacturing index. It came out today. Again, a horrid number, judging, you know, by any recent measure at all, but it was slightly better than what people expected. Now, I think what's happening is people are gearing up for this big V-shaped rebound. I don't think it's going to happen. And I didn't think it was going to happen already. And these riots certainly are not going to help GDP anywhere. So, you know, George, in a way, I don't get it. In a way, we can say that the reports were a little bit better than expected. But I think we got some hard times for the rest of the year, George.
We do for most people, but it's still bizarre about the stock market. Tonight, SpaceX, by the way, successfully launched a new batch of 60 Starlink Internet satellites into orbit and nailed a rocket landing at sea to top off the mission. The launch is the second in 5 days for the California-based rocket builder. On Saturday, they launched a couple NASA astronauts to the International Space Station. Up next, the Rocket Man, David Adair, joins us. We're going to talk about all these space things next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. George Norrie with you, along with the Rocket Man, David Adair. David is an internationally recognized expert in space technology spinoff applications for industry and commercial use. At the age of 11, he built his first of hundreds of rockets, which he designed and test flew. At 17, he won the most outstanding in field of engineering sciences from the U.S. Air Force. At 19, he designed and fabricated a state-of-the-art mechanical system for changing jet turbine engines for the U.S. Navy that set world record turnaround times that still stand right now. David Adair, back on Coast to Coast. Hey, David, how are you?
Pretty good, George. How you doing?
Good. Did you ever launch a rocket and try to take yourself up there?
No, but I sure sent a lot of experimental packages up, though.
You know, I'm trying to imagine this SpaceX launch today sending up 60 satellites into orbit. I mean, how small are these satellites or how big to get them up there? 60 of them. That's unbelievable.
It is. Because of the electronics of today, been able to reduce the size of satellites tremendously. But still, that's a lot of them. That's what we call a constellation. And it's like a set of stars. He's put so many out. But he's gearing up for a new wave of electronics coming. And Elon has done quite a few things, you know, I just wouldn't expect. He got NASA to backpedal so fast, they're lucky he didn't break the sound barrier in allowing commercial applications into space. It wasn't always like that. It's been very difficult to do that. I've been working on the space application part of it for the last 50 years. I just looked at my charts and I went, dang, I'm getting old.
That's a long time. Is he far ahead, Elon Musk, far ahead of Jeff Bezos and Jeff's space endeavors?
Yeah, he's, well, they're all pretty much, they're only a contract difference between them. But what Elon's done is that he's cracked that wall that NASA has kept in place for at least the last six decades. Really not letting anybody on the commercial side to be free to work up there. Had to go through their ships, had to go through their equipment and do all of the things that they required and restrictions. And they just was constantly backlogging things up till it was just a mess.
Why didn't we see a company, David, like Boeing become what SpaceX has become right now? Because they've got all the money, too.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. A good example of what you just asked about would be McDonnell Douglas.
That's right.
McDonnell Douglas, I was working with them all the way back in 1980. And we were working on a thing called an electrophoresis processor. Now, people might be sitting there and they roll their eyes, you know. You better pay attention to this. The electrophoresis processor, you can type it in the internet, type up electrophoresis in space, 1985, and read up on that thing. It's a device that is built, mostly used in hospitals, and it has a solution, and it's got a rectangular screen, and in the flow-through process, it kind of looks like an aquarium or a lava lamp. You remember how an old 60s lava lamp looked like?
Oh, yeah. Those things are weird looking.
Yeah, they were, but there was, like, you're waiting for that solution to separate, right, and it turned into a big glob and float up somewhere. Well, that's the problem we had with the electrophoretic processors. I guess, first of all, what the hell is that? The electrophoretic processor is a machine that we can load up enzymes and hormones in, and we fire an electrical charge through there, and the electrons go in a straight line. And the enzymes and hormones kind of get the hot for electrons and chase them like Pac-Man, and you'll get this layer effect. But the problem here on Earth, the processors are sitting in a lab in a hospital in the gravity field.
Hmm.
And we can never get that thing to separate at the bottom. It looks like an old 60s lava lamp. And the doctors kept telling us, man, there's something in that bottom layer, but we can't get to it. So McDonnell Douglas and a bunch of us, we got together and we built an electrophoretic processor, put it on board the space shuttle on STS-4, the fourth flight. It went out there, and the man that was running the thing was a guy named Greg Jarvis. And Greg Jarvis, at that time, was the first commercial astronaut. Not these guys with SpaceX today. Everybody's claiming they're the first. No, they're not. Look it up. First commercial astronaut was Greg Jarvis. He was running this electrophoretic processor for McDonnell Douglas. Well, we fired it up, and guess what? On the first pass, it cleared all the way to the bottom of the screen.
Wow.
And sure enough, there it was. There were these enzymes and hormones sitting there, four times larger than anything we've seen on Earth. But get this, George, the gravity convection curve, that's the second problem. The gravity convection fields were out of the way. And the pureness of these enzymes and hormones were 100 times that of Earth. And because of the purity of this, these hormones and enzymes, it allows you to manufacture, guess what? Vaccines and serum.
Now let's talk about that, David, when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, David Adair with us, the Rocket Man. David, so are you saying that in space you might be able to develop vaccines quicker than you can on planet Earth?
Not only quicker, but you can develop much more pure forms of it. You know, a child after the first or second grade, they've already had like 30 shots. And it's because of the nastiness of the vaccines that have the antibodies and the
exactly
preservatives, and they put
mumps, measles, rubella all in one shot, and I think it contributes to autism.
Right, none of that stuff is in the vaccines from space because the gravity from convection fields allows to separate down to a purity of 100 times that of Earth. We don't have any need for that.
Well, when they bring the vaccine back down, does something happen to it, or is it okay?
Unaffected, because after it's been separated, it's been processed, it's now isolated, so when it comes back to a gravity field, it's unaffected.
So do you need microbiologists up there in the ISS developing these things?
Yeah, well, we need. See, this is what happened with McDonnell Douglas, to answer your question. Why don't we have somebody like McDonnell Douglas behaving like...
Right, which Boeing has bought out, by the way.
Yeah, well, what happened to McDonnell Douglas was they built a 580-pound processor, which could really crank up the amount of vaccines, and then they were building two more devices that would have been free floaters. We'd put them out in orbit, and they just float and manufacture 24/7 the vaccines. We're trying to get up to a production level. And then NASA steps in and tells McDonnell Douglas, no, you can't do that. You're over-commercializing space.
Jeez.
They said that in 1983. I was sitting right there and listened to it. And I went, what do you mean over-commercializing space? That's what our charter is. And they went, no, we're not going to do it.
If they could make a better vaccine, I'm all for it because I'm not a proponent of vaccines on this planet.
It's just, and it's not just limited to vaccines, it's pharmaceuticals that we can make up there in a weightless environment. It's stuff just near to what Merlin the sorcerer could make. There's just unbelievable things I saw occur up there. And all we had to work with was small research devices that would only, like a static device, that not a free flow device. A static is only a smear between two glass plates for a microscope. You can't manufacture stuff. We needed large facilities, which is what the shuttles were originally built for, to manufacture these big space-based facilities, and they never let any of it flow. They stopped it. I can't explain why that happened. But all this knowledge, stuff that we've done, has been shelved for the last 50 years. I've just been sitting on the shelf with it. And now you have everybody's all excited that we're going to space and all. And it's too bad the riots and stuff are going on because y'all are really missing the main part of some activities happening. That is a big deal with what Elon Musk has pulled off.
Oh, it's huge.
It is. It's going to it's going to take the cork out of the bottle. And it's that's a bottle me and my colleagues have been sitting in for 5 decades and been working on this stuff.
I got calls, David, a couple months ago when he sent up one of his Starlinks of 50 satellites, from people talking about UFOs, and they were saying these were all in a big line and just kind of moving along. What is it? Well, it turned out to be these.
Yeah.
And we're going to get a lot of these reports. Peter Davenport at the National UFO Reporting Center sure. is going to get flooded with phone calls after tonight's launch.
You know, you can't blame it. At least people are looking up. But still, the information's not getting out. People are missing the main. It's like taking a shower with a raincoat on. You're just missing the whole event.
Yeah, exactly.
The question that they'll ask people, okay, well, after SpaceX and you get up there, what are you going to do? Well, I don't know. I've got a list of projects from here
Long oh, my God. Are they tapping into you, your expertise? Is Jeff Bezos Blue Origin or Elon Musk? Nobody is talking to you about these?
I'm sitting there going, I have libraries full of this stuff. And I thought, man, all they got to do is just come over and ask me, hey, what's up with this? You know, tell us about the electric freezer processor. Well, hell, let's build one. You know, I've got all the plans right here.
David, I got to tell you, of everyone I've interviewed over the past 18 years on this program and 10 years on my local shows, you have the highest IQ of anybody I've ever talked to. I mean, you are like beyond most people. I can't believe they haven't tapped into you somehow.
I don't know. I don't know about that. I can't find myself in the morning when I wake up.
Well, that's the guy. That's somebody with a high IQ.
I have a cardboard lifestyle cutout of Albert Einstein, and he's at my door, and he's nailed to it. And so every morning I wake up, I go, "Hi, Albert."
All I know is when I'm at events, folks, and I run into David, he always has a great compliment about the ties I'm wearing.
He's in shirts, man.
The time.
Great shirts and ties.
I love it. Now, what's going to happen after Blue Origin and SpaceX? Is there any other competitors out there?
Not really. See, that's what I was talking about. Everybody's in a hurry to get there. You're building the taxi to get you there. Well, what are you going to do? They don't know. I've been sitting here for 5 decades. I've got project after project. You know what I can do with metal? We got metals. We got electronic crystals. We got pharmaceuticals. A space hospital. God almighty, you're to see what happens up there.
Jeez, what a great idea.
Oh, I can go on and on.
You might be able to get a remedy, a vaccine to the COVID-19 up there.
Well, give you an idea of what we can do in an area like that of research. There's so much stuff that happens to the human body once you get outside the gravity field, and it's not always bad. Everybody's saying, yeah, you get atrophy with the heart, and you have leaking calcium in the bones and advanced arthritis. Yeah, but you know what? There's a whole lot of other things going on, too. For instance, well, how about the cellular regeneration level? That thing goes into just like warp drive. So, well, what guy would that be? Well, imagine being cut to the bone and you heal so fast, you don't even have any scar tissue, not enough time to form.
Wow. That's amazing, too.
You know, an arm or leg cut off, the ability to grow it back.
Attach it or grow it back?
Grow it back. The base of your neck, there's an encoded block there.
Just like a reptile that grows its tail back or something like that.
Well, when your memory is not stored in your head. It is stored on little sheetlets running down your entire spinal column. That's where your memory is located. But anyhow, at the base of the neck, at the head, there's a spot there, and that thing has the entire human body, all 1,000 billion cells encoded. You remember when people come back from war and their legs are blown off and said their foot itch?
Yes.
The phantom
situation. That's right.
It's not.
Phantom
it's
pain.
Still, that memory of that cell, that block at the base of your brain is still there. We tap into it.
That's a good point.
We do with the cellular regeneration process that happens in the weightless environment, like a space hospital. Your cells grow back so fast, you grow your arm right back out to your fingernails in perfect detail. Glass snakes do it. They get their tail cut off. They grow it right back. They're humans. I mean, not humans, they're animals. So we're in the animal kingdom. This stuff is feasible. We're just not paying attention to it. Like this electrophoresis processor could render a vaccine to you that you could take one shot with this thing, be coronavirus-free worldwide for life. And nobody's even looking at it, not even talking about it. Don't even know anything about it.
And I bet it's very effective cost-wise, too, for people, isn't it?
Oh, man, we can make you could get it easily covered by your insurance.
Jeez. Now, why have we spent 9 years with the Russians having them launch us into space? Finally, we broke that streak Saturday when SpaceX took two astronauts up to the International Space Station. But why have we waited 9 years? What happened? Why did we stop the space shuttle? Is it a dangerous craft to fly? I mean, we've had two tragedies with it. What's happening?
You know, I destroyed my TV set the day they were having. We were told, this is a day to celebrate. We're putting the shuttles in the museums. I destroyed my TV that day.
You don't have that kind of temper, David, do you?
Oh, yeah, I did right there at that moment.
Oh, now, boy.
Here's the deal. You took the shuttle fleet and you put it in mothballs. Now, 66% of the life of the shuttle fleets was still in them. You only lose 35% of your fleet, and then you put them in mothballs. Now you got no way to get up.
Jeez, that's like junking a car with 35,000 miles on it.
That is exactly right. And now you got a $150 billion platform up there called ISS, and you got no way to get to it. Somebody explain to me why we do that. And then we're told to celebrate. You know, and I did get that angry.
Now, will somebody like Elon Musk, will he make money with SpaceX? Is he can, because, you know, he spent, I don't know how many billions the guy had.
Right. There's a joke we have in our world. If you want to be a multimillionaire in space, become a billionaire first.
That's like the restaurant business, too.
In a way, but I'll tell you what. To answer your question, yes. Maybe he won't recoup it all in his lifetime, but his descendants sure are. Imagine what a vaccine worldwide for coronavirus be worth to you right now.
Oh, my God. That could be why Bill Gates is working on it.
Yeah, and how can I top that? Yeah, I can. The very reason we did the electrophoretic processor, do you know what ailment we were working on for a vaccine for? Diabetes.
Oh, that's huge.
That'd be bigger than coronavirus.
Yeah, it would be. It would be.
It's just.
And how would it work? How would you hook it up to somebody, and how long would they have to, you know, go through that process?
Well, they wouldn't. It'd just come down. It'd be in a vaccine. I'll just give you a shot in your arm and send you on your way.
That's it?
That's it.
My God.
And this is not science fiction. I'm not crazy. I can show you all on paper.
Would you take the vaccine before I get it?
Yeah. I would take anything we make up there.
All right. That might be worth watching.
Yeah, see if I grow a foot out of my head. But, no, it's just amazing the stuff that we can do. And it's really sad that we've got all this other stuff going on distracting everybody from, that was a huge event Elon Musk pulled off. And now all the stuff I've got shelved on the shelves here, I guess I can pull them off and dust them off and get them ready because we can go back to space. Man, I can manufacture stuff till the cows come home.
And today, David, after he launched his 60 internet satellites, he brought his rocket back down safely in the sea, and they picked it up, and everything's fine. I mean, they can reuse it again.
You know, we could have done that decades ago.
Yeah.
Chose not to. They like the disposable rockets because they had contracts and they get money, and that's how they kept cash flowing.
Absolutely.
So saved a lot of things. I'll give you another example. You remember the external tank of the space shuttle? That thing was huge, was it not?
The one that blew up, for example? That one?
Yeah. Tank, with the two solid rocket boosters on each side.
Yeah, they had an O-ring issue, didn't they?
Well, you'd start on that. Anyway, the external tank is monstrous. It's bigger than the space shuttle itself. The shuttle's sitting on top of it. Do you know that the shuttle had to push that external tank down when it got to the top of the orbital plane so that it would fall back and burn up and land in the Indian Ocean and sink to the bottom of the Indian Ocean? We sent all those external tanks to the bottom of the sea. Now, what I had planned to do, I said, wait a minute, let's just have the shuttle move to the side, let the external tank roll on out into orbit, then get about 14 of them, hook them together, you have a 1/3 mile diameter ring of these external tanks, run two through the center, hook them up, and you've got the biggest space station you've ever seen in your life, and a million times stronger than the erector set they got there they call ISS.
Yeah, what are they doing up there, David?
That's a good question. They're supposed to be doing industrial experiments. Y'all ever hear anything from it?
Nope.
Nope, not a word. And yet we have performed the kind of stuff I'm talking about, the electrophoretic process, the metals. Oh, my God, what I can do with metal up there. there are over 5,000 industrial experiments done by NASA and 15,000 done on Mir. And these are each one of these processes is turning out a product. Let me tell you what a piece of metal, you melt metal and you put it out in a floating environment, okay?
Mm-hmm.
How do you shape metal in a weightless environment? It's like trying to hammer Jell-O to the wall or shovel smoke.
Or catch a balloon in the wind.
Yeah. Or cats. Anyway, it's a little hard to do. However, I figured out a way to do something with it. The astronauts was listening to some rock and roll music. The sound waves was pushing the metal everywhere. So I went and got a Moog synthesizer. And I looked at the geometric universe. Do you know for every square, circle, triangle, rectangle, trapezoid, there's a corresponding set of sounds for it? Mathematical equation.
That's true.
Extrapolation. So what I was able to do was rig up a scanner, like the bar scanner you have in a grocery store. And I lay something down and I scan it. Feed that scan into the mathematical calculator that I built. And what happened, I changed the mathematical expressions into musical expressions, vibrato waves. So what happens is you have something inside a floating container with six-sided speaker container. You play the music, the metal shapes into the exact form that you want.
What a great idea.
Three-dimensional casting with metal from stereo sound waves. So people go, well, that metal will be no good. The piece of metal made up there, if you could see inside metal today on the atomic structure, it's chaos. Because as you cast metal and pour it out and it's hardening, here comes gravity convection curves of the Earth again. They get in there. You can only get about a 60% blend, and that's it. In space, I got a 100% molecular blend. Then I could pick the shape I wanted and freeze it until it hardens by having the standing interlocking vibrato waves to hold it in place. So what I came back with was a piece of metal no thicker than my thumbnail, had the atomic structure of a honeycomb inside it. They said it wouldn't be worth anything because it'd come back in gravity field being brittle. And I said, I don't think so.
No, you proved them wrong. David, we're going to come back and take phone calls with our incredible listeners next on Coast to Coast AM.